Good afternoon. I need to start by asking that everyone, if you have to make a call, please do it from the parking lot. I know it's not convenient, but it really does disturb folks. So please do that. It's hard living in buildings with lots of people. It's part of monastic life. You think no one can hear you, but everyone can hear you. It's hard. Okay. So this afternoon we're going to talk about the transcendent dependent arising, because it will help us look at some of the definitions of words that we've been encountering in the texts, and also hopefully the inspiration to take the path to its completion. So the circle at the bottom of the handout might be very familiar to many of you, or not, and it doesn't really matter that much, because there is a lot of teaching. There are a lot of teachings out there about this very fundamental kind of teaching of the Buddha that sort of sits at the basis of the Dhamma. In simple terms, it's the way that the Buddha described how reality works, rather than eternalism or nihilism. He talked about everything coming into existence through conditions, and identifying that the basic root that causes anything to come about in samsara, or particularly living beings, is ignorance or not knowing, avijja. Because if we knew, if we had the full understanding of reality, then we wouldn't continue to crave and push forward into having another round of existence. And as many of you probably know, this model can be applied to what happens time after time in our life as we create something new. But it's also, or just come to the present moment again and again with a fresh kind of existence in our mind and our body. But that's not really what I think the Buddha was after. I think he really wanted us to recognize that there are many lifetimes, and this is how you keep going round in samsara. So I'm just going to go through that circle at the bottom in very, very simple terms, because it's not really where I want to put the attention right now. So, because of ignorance or not knowing, there are the karmic formations or the sankharas that do not come to rest. Instead, there's craving, pushing into a new existence. And it's one way to think about it is all of our unfinished business. Or someone asked the Dalai Lama, what is it that gets reborn? And he said, your bad habits. And it's also your good habits, fortunately. But it's the, you know, like my mom always had a long list of things she wanted to do. And my uncle was her younger brother, and he loved to tease her. And he said, you know, we're going to have to put that to-do list in your coffin. Because it's never going to get, you know, you're never going to be done. And that's exactly kind of what happens in samsara. You've got that traveling with you, and that's the sankhara, the karmic formations or mental formations. And it seems, when I reflect on this, the way I see it, it's like an energy that's still, it's active. And it's active, and it meets with and causes the arising of consciousness and name and form. So mentality and materiality and consciousness hold each other up. And the Buddha used this image of two sheaves of wheat or corn or whatever you have around, but they can't stand on their own. They hold each other up. So consciousness conditions name and form, and name and form is a condition for consciousness. So that comes together. So now you've got a body and mind. And then the sense bases can come up because you have a body and mind. And once you have the senses, then you're going to be able to perceive and experience sights, sounds, tastes, touches, smells, thoughts. You're going to have contact. And whenever we, see something, hear something, etc., then it's possible that a feeling will arise as a result, almost immediately. And our thoughts, too. Feelings come up because of our thoughts. And so when feeling comes, we want to get away from unpleasant feeling, and we want to draw closer to or continue pleasant feeling. So it causes us to, we start wanting something here. And that's the tanha. That's the tanha. We start to want something, and it becomes a craving. We either want to pull it towards us or push it away. And then when the craving gets established, it becomes the clinging. Or here they use the word attachment. And that part of the cycle is really easy to identify. I see some food, I have a reaction to it, I want it or I don't want it. Maybe, there are neutral things too, but we're really talking about whatever might want you to, bring it closer or push it away. And we can experience this all day long, we can be aware that this is happening, and then what happens, you see something that you come to really like. Like, over the past couple years, maybe I've been having more stomach acid problems, and my wonderful bhikkhuni sister, Aya Chittananda, started making chai for me to have, like, in the evening, and then my stomach would be very happy, right? And she perfected a recipe that's really delicious and no caffeine, and and whoever's living there, they jump to get it for me whenever I want it. It's so sweet. And now I if I don't have it, I'm like, it's just like, this is naturally the way our body and mind work. So we can recognize this with small, simple things that don't have a lot of charge on them, but then you can also see it much more with the bigger things. How dependent we become on things being the way we want them to be, and how much we want to have more of what we want, what we like. And it really is intense when you're going through the phase between death and the next birth. It can be quite intense, that desire to get another body. And so this is where the becoming really, you know, this, like, as we can see becoming, whatever label we might put on, whatever identity we might pick up, but becoming, a human being again, for example, and then birth. And you probably already know that birth is actually the cause of death. There's all those other possible little things that trigger it, but it's really, you know, a heart attack or whatever, you know. But the reality is that as soon as a living being is born, there's no other way out. You're going to die at some point. And aging, sickness, death, not getting what we want, having to deal with what we don't want, all those things that are in the chanting, it all sums up to dukkha. So we have dukkha. Suffering, dissatisfaction, feeling like something's not right, not complete. It's that, you know, unstable. The word dukkha actually comes from kind of a wheel that has a wobble. It's like, it's just not right. Not balanced, not correct, not settled. And as I mentioned one time earlier in the week, I have a friend, and I don't think she'd mind me telling you, it's Aya Ananda Bodhi. She came across the Dhamma when she was a teenager, and she was very, very relieved to read about the Four Noble Truths and the First Noble Truth saying that there is dukkha, because that's what she was experiencing a lot of, and she was just so grateful. And then to see that there's a path out of it, there's a way to address it that actually leads to happiness. So that's the part we're going to focus on. And what happened there for her was that it kind of hit her at an emotional level. It wasn't just intellectual. It was a deep level, and she, seeing, you know, this acknowledgement of dukkha that she was feeling as a teenager, and then, you know, having the at least enough faith in the rest of the noble truths to want to explore it and to think, okay, there is a way out of this. And this is where the sadha, the, call it faith, you can also call it confidence, but there's a, like, oh good. There's this, and then there's a they call it gladdening here, pamoja. Pamoja is often translated as joy also. A number of these words might have the same words in the list in the dictionary that they could be translated into, and so you might see it, you know, translated in different ways in different contexts, but you're just really glad that you've found this Dhamma. And then there's a the gladness, the joy that's there is pamoja. And from pamoja, so in each of these cases, they're considered vital conditions. And there's a sutta, in the one that's mentioned in the top left of the page, the Upanisa Sutta. It's in the Sanyutta Nikaya, it's the Connected Discourses, and it's in the book 12, which is about dependent origination primarily. And it's number 23, and it's translated, Upanisa is translated as vital conditions. At least that's the way Venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi translates it. So the dukkha is the condition that leads us to recognize this faith. It's not the only way that you start this transcendent chain. There are other places in the suttas where you'll find a similar kind of sequence, almost the same, except it starts differently. And that one example of that is in the numerical discourses on Guttara Nikaya, in the book of 11s, number 2, and it's called Making a Wish, or that's one translation. And what the Buddha says there is that it can start with virtuous conduct, with good sila. You start by, if you have good moral conduct, he said, that's a condition for not having regret. And it's just natural. So in that sutta, he says, you don't even have to wish that you're not going to have regret. You just won't have regret because your conduct is good. And then from there, you don't have to wish, when you don't have regrets, you don't have to wish, may I feel joy, may I have pamoja. It just automatically is there. It's really quite beautiful. And then from the joy of pamoja, the buildup of that is the piti. So you have to have the pamoja first. It's a vital condition for the piti to arise. So this is one reason why it's so crucial for meditation practice that the moral virtue is in place. I can't, maybe some of you will remember this. It was someone, I think, who taught at IMS, I think in the Burmese tradition, who said, yeah, if you're meditating and you're not practicing good sila, it's like you're getting into the boat and you're rowing, but you're still tied to the dock. The boat is tied to the dock. And that's kind of how it is.
Are these psychological conditions or these biological?
Psychological or biological? We're going to have to give you a microphone maybe, but if that's the question, is that psychological or biological? You know, it's mental, again, and the language in the suttas is mental or bodily, and it's mental, but it can be felt and experienced through the body. So when we talk about the body tingling or feeling heat, it's from the mental joy. It's from the spiritual uplift, and that is psychological. But then it's felt in the body. I mean, we know that from other kinds of feelings. Anger, you feel that in your body too. So it's very close connection.
The issues, I have been exposed to this before, always I have so much difficulty to connect one phase with the next one.
Mm-hmm.
With my ignorance, don't make sense. When you go in the psychological aspect, that's okay. But when it comes that you have from attachment, you from that become, and from become, the birth. And then come death, and then repeat the cycle again.
So I want to tell you how I deal with that. Because it's not like you just know this right away. So, oh, that makes sense. I mean, no, it's not quite like that. So I look at the parts that I can experience, that I can witness directly, like, you know, the thought arises about something and then a feeling arises. I can experience that. And then, you know, that I can see how that comes from contact. You know, the contact being, you know, whatever sense organ, and then the object that it perceives and the consciousness involved, and then I've got contact, I can understand that. So I can understand if I have name and form, body and mind, and I have the senses, and then I'm going to have contact. I can get that part, right? Makes sense. Clear. Okay, and then a feeling arises. Okay, that's not hard. And then we can witness what we do with that. That's pretty straightforward too, right? And then we can figure out, you know, the craving is there, and then how we get attached to things, that's also easy to identify. And then when it starts to get a little harder to see it directly, I don't worry about that. I just meditate. You know, I do what the Buddha says I should do, and then meditate and let it sink in, and then let wisdom arise. And it's a big deal to get this with direct knowing. It really is. It's not a minor thing. So, but it will come. Yeah.
Just a quick question. With the focus on sila, how come it's not on here? And if I were to draw it on here, where would I put it?
Yeah, this really represents this one sutta called the Upanisa Sutta. Mm-hmm. And the part about the sila comes out in other suttas, including that one I mentioned in the numerical discourses. So what I did on mine, just to remind me, is I put the sila and the no regrets kind of on the side, just below the faith part, or kind of equal with the faith part. Because you can start with faith. I mean, you're going to have the sila too, but they don't, you know, it's not like, you have to kind of piece things together from the suttas. If you just focus a lot on one teaching of the Buddha, you may not have the whole story. Yeah.
Are there any realms, chasms that don't start in avidya, or is that just the ground?
The Buddha,
well, any existence.
The Buddha basically says that it's the same kind of thing in every realm with different conditions. Obviously, it's a lot tougher in the hell realms than it is in the heaven realms. And we can look around on earth and find some pretty hellish realms and some pretty heavenly realms. And you can even see other examples besides Harry, who goes into a hell realm, and it's like, it's not heaven. He told me about some of the tough stuff he had to deal with, but it's certainly not the kind of, you know. So it really varies on karma. But some of the things that all the realms the Buddha said have in common is that there's coming into existence and a leaving existence again. They're all impermanent. And therefore, they're suffering. Because even if you're having a great time in a heaven realm, so they say, you don't really get what's coming, and you've been there such a long time that it feels like forever. I mean, we've had that experience just having the flu or something, you know. So you can kind of imagine, you know. And then they also pass away. And there is that uncertainty even there. And so I think from that we can say, yeah, the ignorance is there. Otherwise, the whole process that's running through you goes cool. It doesn't get reborn anywhere else. Yeah. So the answer is yeah. Or was it no? The way you wrote that, I said the question, maybe it was no, there is no existence. Oh, yeah. That's what I hear. Yeah, except for those who already awaken, and then their karma and the current existence just has to come to an end on its own. Okay, so when when joy arises, and then we see this in meditation. Are you okay?
No, I just told myself a joke. The planet of the Tathagatas.
The planet of the Tathagatas? That's where you want to go.
Write the screenplay.
So this is what we experience as we go deeper into meditation. The same thing. We've got the PT, and then so that's oftentimes translated as rapture, which seems a bit over the top for a lot of the times when you experience it, which kind of misleads people. To know that it can come in these different forms is really helpful, because then you know you're on the right track if some of this stuff is happening. And then it leads to the body becoming, the body and mind both need to become very tranquil, so pasadi. And then with the tranquility, there's another kind of form of happiness, which is called sukha. And it's translated here as bliss. It can be bliss, or it can be just happiness. And sometimes they translate PT as happiness, so it can be kind of confusing. It's probably better to learn the Pali and get a sense. And then when you're experiencing things, you might kind of get that sense of, wow, this is a really kind of full joy, or you feel that tingling all over your body, and the body starts to disappear maybe, and you know, you're definitely feeling the body is very, very tranquil, and the feeling is very, very good, and you could say it's bliss, but you could just say it's happiness. But it's leading into samadhi. And calling samadhi concentration is really not in the vogue right now anymore, because concentration has such a sense of bearing down, you know, concentrating. And that's not what happens with samadhi. It's actually an opening and softening. So, you know, people sometimes call it immersion, or I don't even know what else. Anybody have another?
Stillness.
I like Ajahn Jayasaro, I think, and I'm not sure if he's always translating samadhi. There might be a different Thai word there, but lucid calm is another possibility, I think. In any case, there's mindfulness. The mind is bright, and the mind gets quite still. You know, and different teachers in different schools talk about different things that they think are necessary. Like maybe it's necessary to have no thoughts whatsoever. Ajahn Chah said, if there are thoughts in the background but they don't disturb the calm, it's not a problem. It just really varies depending upon the experience the experiences that the teacher themselves have, and they'll try to lead their students to down the same path. But their minds might not all be going that way. So it's good to know that there are possible ways that you might experience it differently. So that whole sequence, starting with faith or starting with virtue, leading up through, especially the Pamoja is usually there too, and the PT, Pasadi, Sukha, Samadhi. It's like leading you to, I kind of think of it as the top of the mountain. But then what happens? Then it makes a shift to wisdom or insight. So the samadhi provides the ground or the basic vital condition for knowledge and vision to arise. So in some way, seeing the way things are. And that's jnana-dasana, or yata-bhuta jnana-dasana. And when we see the way things are, even if it's, you know, not, it doesn't have to be the complete, bam, you're enlightened, fully enlightened, but you see some aspect of reality and it really hits home. And then they have disenchantment here for Nibbida. Jim Bramali was reading a sutta to us during the Vasa, and he got to this where it was translated as disenchantment. He said, I can't read it that way. Because for him, this is such a strong experience, disenchantment doesn't really cut it, but it's more like being disillusioned. I mean, in a way, you can say, I'm not as enchanted with the world. I'm not enchanted with this or that would bring me all of this craving and attachment anymore. But, you know, it's a little bit stronger. Another way that Nibbida gets translated sometimes is revulsion. And, you know, so you kind of, these two words, Nibbida and Viraga, they can get really translated in different ways, and it can be, you know, they're close in their meaning, but obviously they're not identical. And the Buddha says the knowledge and vision comes, and then the Nibbida comes, and then the Viraga comes. And so I wrote down some of the various ways of translating it out of the dictionary, and also this idea for Nibbida of revulsion. So Nibbida, it can be disillusioned, weariness of, like you're weary of the world. You're like, yeah, I don't need to go to another movie. I don't need to take any more pictures of my dinner. Or look at anybody else's pictures of dinner. Or, you know, whatever. And or it could disenchantment, dissatisfaction, and or disgust with. Now, I think that's a useful addition there. Disgust with. It's not the same as, this is so disgusting. Your dinner is disgusting. No, it's more like, ugh, I'm just not interested in this anymore. You're kind of disgusted with worldly life. You have to watch that one because it could be aversion towards, and like I said, that's not a good way to enter the holy life. But to just be like, I don't really want to go out and try to drum up more business for my software design consulting. Sorry, I just can't make myself do it. Or, you know, pretty up your resume or whatever. It's like, no, why? I want to get enlightened. And this is where people come, this is what we come to. You know, you just like, you see what's going on in the world and you go, oh no, I don't want to do that anymore. My dear friend, Chittananda Bhikkhuni, we will often say something to each other like, wow, look at that. The maple trees get so beautifully golden in the fall where we are, and you know, there's all kinds of natural beauty, and she'll say, but I'm not coming back for that. It also can, they also, you can also translate it as tedium, Nibbida, like a tedium. It does have aversion in here, indifference. So you kind of get the sense, you know, it's not a statement of everything's disgusting, but It's a statement of, yeah, I've just had enough. You know, it's like, and then that's the condition for viraga, which, so viraga is, the root there is raga, which is passion. And then the vi, the v, negates it. So it's non-passion. You're passionless. The passion is gone. And the honeymoon's over. And it's an absence. So at the very, like, the non-passion, it's an absence of desire. So it could be dispassion, like it is here, and in general, I think it is frequently translated that way. Indifference towards something. This also could be disgust. So sometimes when you see disgust, it's viraga. And the destruction of the passions, and then this is an interesting part, it can be waning, fading away, cleansing, purifying, emancipation, even arahantship. And this fading away is what you'll see like in the Anapanasati Sutta, like I was taking you through the different steps. There are 16 instructions. And when you get into the Dhamma part, the last four, I think it's impermanence and then viraga, fading away. And they use fading away there. And what's fading away? It's your desire, your interest, your connection, your attachment. So Bhante Anaglio gave a really beautiful, I liked this image. He said when he was living in Sri Lanka, someone gave the monastery this really beautiful batik cloth, like it's so beautifully colored, painted, you know, it's just gorgeous. And they put it on a table. And it stayed on that table, and he said, you know, like through the sun, through the rain, you know, at first you walk by and it's always like, wow. It's like, and then you walk by and it's just this faded old rag, right? And it's just like, yeah. And that's kind of the way of fading away. It just, you know, it just doesn't hold the luster, the interest, the desire. And that's a vital condition for vimutti, or the freedom, liberation. And then the last step here, the asava kayena, whatever. Knowledge of destruction of the asavas is the knowledge, you know that the taints are destroyed. I also looked at a translation of this by Venerable Tanisaro. I think the only difference is that he likes to use release rather than freedom or liberation. So the knowledge and vision of release. And he does say no and see things as they actually are for Jnanadasana, which I think is pretty accurate. That's good. So,
and asava is taint?
Yeah, it can be translated as outflows or inflows, but it's basically that, the defilements. You basically once you come to peace, there's nothing going out, there's nothing you're bringing in.
Asesa, is that the word for no remainder?
What? No remainder?
Asesa?
Maybe.
Just
popped in my head.
Sorry. I think we're going to get to this, but is there significance to the points that are connected by the lines?
like I've heard like pivot point used before, or where is there any significance?
I'm not sure I know. Oh, you mean like where?
Dukkha, samadhi, vimutti, asa are all connected on the line going down.
I actually don't think so. I think it's just to show you that the wheel keeps rolling. That's my take on it.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't think there's that kind of connection. But somebody might have come up with something else.
I think I've heard before, like, a certain point, it might be contact, where like kind of like karma forms, right? And that's like the really important part. You can kind of catch it before.
I have talked about this in terms of two points in the chain where you really have some options. You can, when there's feeling, you can decide to follow it or not. And I have talked about contact, but actually when you have contact, you can't really stop the feeling from coming. So it's really more with feeling, I think, where you can just, this is what we've been talking about, a strong feeling comes and you stay present with it and you observe it and you let it fade on its own. So other people talked about that too, you know how that works. And then, and that's where you can change your direction and change your future.
What was the other point?
Realization, where, you know, like that actual elimination of avijja, the actual wisdom arising, where there's no longer any confusion. You see the way things actually are, completely see the way things actually are. Yeah. So I wanted to just, one, show you this because as we think about, okay, impermanence, suffering, not self, ugliness, where's the joy? Well, it's in the cultivation, and it really does come through, and it's way better than everything else, and it brings a kind of stability in your life. And it's progressive, and it leads automatically to awakening. So, you know, this is one of the beautiful things that making a wish kind of sequence, that you don't need to wish for, you know, the next phase, it'll come. We do have to have patience and persistence, though, in order for it to happen. Stick with it. Let's get you a microphone. Hold on.
Can you have the reversal? Because I see the iron line with broke the iron line. Can we be in the top and then go back to the beginning?
Okay, so what they're saying there is that there's two ways that the Buddha would present it. He would either start at the epitome and say, if you want to get here, you have to have this. You know, if you want to get to the place where there's the knowledge of the destruction of the defilements, you have to realize that freedom. So that's a vital condition. If you want the freedom, there will have to be dispassion. If you want the dispassion, you'll have to be at the disillusionment and so on like that. So he'll either go forward with it or he'll go backward with it.
Okay.
But we don't go backward. Especially after some point, like stream entry really means you can't fall back. And when you realize certain things, you can't go back to not knowing them. Yeah. Yeah, Molly.
Once again, the question about the bodhisattva and the idea that one makes a choice I understand this is not, this is a development, do I understand? Maybe I don't understand. a development that came with another school or another branch of the stream. But the idea that an awakened being would choose not to not
well,
come back.
They aren't an awake, fully awakened being then. Because if they were, they wouldn't be coming back to help anybody.
So at what point then would the bodhisattva impulse arise?
Anytime. It can come up anywhere along the path, I would say. That wish to help others, or that, you know, determination.
One of the concepts that I see repeated is that she could. There's a wonderful poem about this. You know, she could leave, but she chooses not to until all beings are freed.
I guess some people believe that, but frankly, I don't think it's going to work that way.
Would you tell me when you get there?
I think that, you know, when you're putting all the causes and conditions in for awakening, it's going to happen. And you're not going to be able to say, wait a minute, I have to... I don't think it works like that. I think it just comes. It's like, yeah.
Okay, the inevitability of the release.
Yeah.
Into the
if
into
we're
the
practicing
final awakening.
According to the Buddha's instructions. Exactly. And, you know, someone was, I think it might have been Zhao talking about, you know, is it a gradual thing or is it like a hits you like lightning? And it's both. I mean, the gradual thing is happening and then insight hits and you don't go back. And, you know, having that wish to help all beings, I think it's beautiful, and I don't see how to avoid that either, actually. Because it's like, you know, the development of the heart, you know, it can't be closed on this path.
That's a beautiful way to put it. The development of the heart, once it opens, it can't be closed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could I just...
Please.
I'm really appreciating these questions because, to be honest, it's not something that we spend a lot of time talking about overtly, at least at my stage of training. So it's not like I'm...
Is it just kind of taken for granted everybody knows? Or how does that go?
I think maybe like after retreat we could have a really interesting conversation because it's raising all kinds of wonderful, fruitful questions for me. So
yeah.
I'm really appreciating it and I'm not offended or I
really. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I'd really be doing something wrong then.
but it's just really, I think it's fascinating and yeah. So thank you. Keep it coming.
Yeah. Any other questions? I wouldn't let this become a burden in any way. You know, like, you don't have to get too intellectual about this unless that helps. Do what helps. Bring more peace and more tranquility and more, you know, metta and virtue, and you don't have to know everything about it. It'll happen anyway. But it can help, especially those of us who have a discursive mind, to have a sense of the lay of the land. Yeah, Allie? Back here, right there. Thank you for all the help, Rachel.
discursive mind. So this need for some map is something that is very present for me right now relative to the distillation of lifetime of a variety of integrative explorations. So from the perspective of application in a meditation practice or a movement practice, have you got some recommendations of how to follow? Or, I mean, I would think of even just throwing it on my table.
Yeah, just have it hanging out there and see if it stimulates anything. I think one very, I think very useful and simple approach is to just get the body and the mind to relax. And that's the tranquility. So another way to look at all of this is through the seven factors of enlightenment, which starts with mindfulness. We can't get anywhere really without mindfulness, so that's understandable. And all of the modalities, I'm sure, mindfulness is key. And then there's right away the next one is investigation of Dhamma. So kind of that's what we're doing, except that we don't want to just do it on an intellectual level. We want to let it sink in deep. So sometimes, and then the third factor there is energy. And so sometimes when, especially those of us who have a mind that wants to think, if you're investigating some Dhamma, giving yourself a Dhamma talk, then a lot of energy can come up because of that inspiration. And the energy, I think PT is next. Then you start feeling the PT. So it's like humming through your body. I mean, it can be pretty subtle or it can be really strong sometimes. And then the tranquility. The body needs to be tranquil and the mind needs to be tranquil.
So I realized that this morning in the way in which you gave us the 16 steps. It was extremely useful and clear from a way in which my body could really hear from the perspective of my practice before this.
Good.
And so now this weaving, I mean, actually with, you know, the habitual creativity of inspiration to discursive application, right? That offers, this offers a more detailed approach to something that I'm already kind of somaticized and offers a new view, let's say, for me personally, and where I know my need is to slow it down, to repeat, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, rinse.
Yes,
repeat.
Exactly.
And that it, and that's why the question of what my container, what my field of merit might now begin to sense forward movement with from the seed, because this feels like a real seed to me.
Yeah, I think that, you know, like the Buddha, I didn't actually bring in the Chanki Sutta yet, but the Buddha would say, just keep practicing all of it. You know, you just practice all of these pieces. If the mindfulness needs shoring up, you work with that. And if the sila needs shoring up, you work with that. And if your generosity needs shoring up, you work with that. And the wisdom part. And so it's like you keep working your way through it and noticing what needs to be changed. And then you find ways to change it, change your patterns.
That's how I'm getting it.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's pretty organic in that regard. And And part of the beauty of having the map or the lay of the land is that you don't get stuck thinking, now what do I do? I have all this PT and I just keep feeling that time after time or whatever, or sometimes not, but sometimes yes, and then not getting any farther maybe. And so then the encouragement to take it farther, to let the mind and body relax even more, to let that fall away and see what comes up in its place, and so on like that.
Yeah. Another question, again, about another color of system, another nuance of the way that Buddhism is presented, about the pathless path, about the goalless goal, about don't plan, don't struggle, all the I can't source this exactly for you, except that somewhere over a long
way. Not in the suttas.
Really, I can see it's not in the suttas.
Well, yeah. There are lots of suttas, but it is true that it's, if we get too focused on a goal, we start to tighten up, and that doesn't work.
That's competition and
yeah,
struggle.
Yeah, it's too rigid and stifling, I think. So it's like you want to have the determination and the energy, but you also need to like really be relaxed. You know, so I think that's where some of that comes from. Mm. You know, the goalless goal and you know,
the pathless path.
But there is a goal and there is a path, according to the suttas. and what I think it means is that we need to be very attentive to our experience, and when we feel ourselves tightening up, look at what's going on and try to see how to help it and see if you can really let go and relax. And it's not just about relaxing, you also have the intention to actually develop. And, you know, it's interesting. You have to have that balance. Is like being alert and attentive and open and ready for this unfolding to occur, putting in the causes and conditions, and then, you know, seeing what happens.
Okay. So when you do that,
yeah,
it arises. That's the inevitability. That's the mm-hmm. That's the stream.
That's right. The Buddha said all of this is conditioned. That means we put in the causes and conditions for what we want to have occur in the future.
But we have to let go because it's not us. It's not this.
Yeah, we're not going to make it happen. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's right. So what do you think, Debbie? Did that do it? Yeah? Okay, good.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I mentioned the advice to Mahapajapati, and my summarization was a bit too brief, so I ask them to print up the discourse. You can tell it's very short. Thought I'd just read it to you. At one time, the Buddha was staying near Vaishali at the Great Wood, in the hall with the peaked roof. Then Mahapajapati Gotami went up to the Buddha, bowed, stood to one side and said to him, "Sir, may the Buddha please teach me Dhamma in brief. When I've heard it, I'll live alone, withdrawn, diligent, keen, and resolute." go to me, you might know that certain things lead to passion, not dispassion, to yoking, not to unyoking, to accumulation, not dispersal, to more desires, not fewer, to lack of contentment, not contentment, to crowding, not seclusion, to laziness, not energy, to being burdensome, not being unburdensome. Categorically, you should remember these things as not the teaching, not the training, and not the teacher's instructions. You might know that certain things lead to dispassion, not passion, to unyoking, not to yoking, to dispersal, not accumulation, to fewer desires, not more, to contentment, not lack of contentment, to seclusion, not crowding, to energy, not laziness, to being unburdensome, not being burdensome. Categorically, you should remember these things as the teaching, the training, and the teacher's instructions. We're supposed to be easy to look after. Sometimes one can see a way of holding the monastic rules as a way that makes you very difficult to look after because it's so precise. And then it's good to step back. How can I be easy to look after? Yeah. And we can do that in our lay life, too. Debbie wants to say something.
Thank you. Yes, I just wanted to ask you what sutta that was again.
Oh, this one, Go to Me? I didn't take down the reference. But you'll find it on Sutta Central.
Go to Me, right?
Yeah. A brief advice to Go to Me. What?
Could you make us a copy?
I imagine it could be done. Or I could give you this one. Yeah, I should have written it down. Can be found.
Not sure this is related, but a while back you mentioned about becoming invisible. And I'm being
becoming
invisible.
Invisible.
There was something that you've said a few times. It's been referenced, or there's a category of the invisibles. Not tracking. Okay.
Anybody else know what that was? Invisible might have been a different word.
It could have been. So when you said it's easy to take care of relative to materiality and the substance of how we spend time with objects and all of that.
Yeah, and people.
That's what I mean, yeah. And so I guess I'm making this up.
I don't remember the invisibility spell, but
okay.
I knew of someone once who put one on her car. No kidding. I worked in a place where the person in the next office was a witch. We became good friends. And she had a coven. And one of her coven members was getting into... Oh, no, she was getting tickets. And she thought, I'm going to put an invisibility spell on my car. And she did. Then she started to get into little accidents. And person after person would say, I didn't see you. And after the third one, there's always three, but this really was the third accident, she went, oh, the invisibility spell! Okay. Free association, sorry.
Only in California.
The whole documentation team were witches.
I must have used that software.
I think you got something. Okay. Okay. Any other serious questions? Okay, maybe it's time to continue meditating. All right. So tonight we'll have another session at 7, and it's just going to be discussion, so bring your questions. There's no plan. Yeah, it'll be here. And I think I'll bring the Chanki Sutta with me in case we want to hear that one. Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.